We've decided who we're going to operate on and when and what the indications for operation are. What about the operation itself? So you said earlier that if you've got a single band adhesion, you might want to try laparoscopy. But what about those that you don't think have a congenital adhesion? So they haven't got a virgin abdomen. They've got a great big midline scar. Should we try to do laparoscopically or not?
So I think I'll preface this by saying that you need a surgeon who's confident in what they're doing. So if you've got a surgeon who's an excellent laparoscopic surgeon, then actually they might be willing to take on slightly more challenging cases. If you've got someone who's less comfortable with it, then, you know, doing it openly, you need to relieve the obstruction, and the approach is just kind of the window dressing to an extent. In terms of case selection for laparoscopic surgery, we did, as part of NASPO, we did some survey work with consultants in the UK who indicated that they would probably consider, they would consider laparoscopic approaches to adhesiolysis in someone who's got isolated right leg fossa surgery and previous pelvic surgery. So, you know, where you think it's just going to be a few little bands that are holding things down. And possibly in a virgin abdomen. And again, this depends on the level of obstruction, how much room you think you're going to have based on the CT. So it's important to make sure you check the CT scan before you commit to one route or another. And it's interesting that those selection criteria, you know, right leg fossa surgery, pelvic surgery, it's actually the Lasso trial, which was published in the Lancet GastroPet last year or the year before. And they looked at laparoscopic versus open adhesiolysis, and their primary endpoint was time to gut recovery, so GI2, which is tolerating diet passing flatus. And they showed that actually you saved about 2 days by doing laparoscopic surgery in this limited adhesion group. So I think certainly it's got a role, and if you've got the skills, which we'd hope most people are training to have the skills, that's something we should offer. Now, if we're talking about doing an open operation, if you've got to do an open operation, you've got to do an open operation. I think the things that people need to be aware of, particularly for the more junior trainees, you're going to be going in through probably a previous midline scar. You have to be so aware that there's almost certainly bowel tacked up behind the scar, or you've got to assume there is until proven otherwise. So when you begin your operation, obviously after adequate resuscitation with appropriate perioperative support, that first incision should be taking some of the virgin territory, if possible. So either go above or below the current scar, having had a CT scan, try and enter the peritoneal cavity safely above or below, and then you're going to have to work down, chip off that everything from the anterior abdominal wall, and then start your systematic inspection either from distal backwards or proximal downwards until you've freed up everything. And it is really important, even if you think there's just one band causing the problem, make sure you've gone looking for everything else, because if you've done one laparotomy, you don't want to be going back in 2 or 3 days' time and you look like an idiot and the patient won't thank you. So I think those are the, there's not much to say, it's adhesiolysis, it's dividing adhesions. Just, being methodical. Yeah. And obviously be aware that if you do have a bit of bowel that doesn't look happy, if you open the abdomen, you've got some blood-stained ascites, that tells you that you're going to have some unhappy bowel in there, and you need to get that freed as quickly as possible to make an assessment on whether it's viable or not, which obviously is looking at things like the colour of it. Can you feel pulsations in the mesenteric arcade around it? Does it have signs of peristalsis? If you're borderline, wrap it in something warm, do something else for a few minutes, and then come back and see. If you've not recovered any of those things, that bit of bowel probably needs to come out, and then you can make decisions about anastomosis, stoma, whatever, depending on the patient's clinical status. I won't go into that too much because that's a case-by-case discussion.
Yeah.
Anything after the operation that we need to bear in mind specifically for small bowel obstruction?
So I think I think explaining to patients, it's very important to explain to patients pre-op what to expect post-op. So as I said, most patients will have an ileus after surgery. And it's important to explain to them that your guts will go on strike. And that's not because we haven't done the operation properly. That's just what's going to happen. And we will support you through that. And then they'll want to know, how will I know when I can eat and drink? You explained about passage of flatus being that thing we look for it as a sign, absence of pain. Also explain to them that we'll know when your bowel's recovered because you will pass lots of really salty, liquidy stuff. So you get quite a dramatic gut recovery. That's normal. We're expecting that to happen. And then it will start to recover and go back to normal over a few days after that. So that's what you make sure you've counseled them about that up front, so none of that is scary or a surprise when it happens. And then I'd also, I'd be looking at nutrition. So if we're operating on day three, is this one actually where we should be intervening on nutrition? It's obviously, so I'll have a chat to my colleague, nutrition colleagues about them. We're going to, if they've been a high risk of laparotomy, they're obviously going to go to high dependency. I'm going to think about their DVT prophylaxis, because chances are if you've done a redo laparotomy, they're not going to be very mobile for a few days afterwards. I think that those would be most of my consideration.
Okay. So thanks, Matt. I mean, we covered a lot of ground there. So in a nutshell, can you summarise the really important things for everyone to remember?
I think number one, early resuscitation is important, and an NG tube is part of that resuscitation, because that's how you're going to assess fluid, help you assess fluid volume status. Number two, don't do an abdominal X-ray. There's no value. Do a CT scan. Number three, non-operative management does not mean conservative management. So you should always be doing something for your patients, whether it's sorting out their fluids, stratifying the surgery with a gastrographing challenge, or supporting their nutrition. You should be doing those things. And I think the last thing is about constant reassessment. Look, make sure you don't miss signs of ischemia, and do something by 72 hours unless you have a really, really, really good reason not to do something by 72 hours. And that would be my takeaway in 2 minutes.
Okay. Matt Lee, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast brought to you by School of Surgery. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook at School of Surgery, on iTunes, on Podomatic at schoolofsurgery.podomatic.com, and finally, by searching School of Surgery on YouTube. Thank you very much, and see you next time.